Thank you for tuning in to Starkey Multifamily Podcast, where we aim to bring you the best multifamily and syndication information. Please share, like, or give me a 5-star rating. It really does help. I'm your host, Reed Starkey, and my guest today started his dream of being a real estate investor from an abnormal path. With an annual income of $60,000 for his blended family of 7 children and only $12,000 of his own funds saved up, he sought a wealth of knowledge from thousands of hours of podcasts and Audible real estate investing books. He made his first purchase of a 6-unit building on May 15th, 2017. And today, Michael is retired from his 9-to-5 and has a portfolio of over 130 units. Talk with Michael Beeman and how he went from his first 6-unit to 130 units in just 2 years using creative financing, partnerships, and even a 62-unit syndication. So thank you, Michael. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Let's start at the very beginning. So what made you decide to get into that first multifamily?
My wife and I got married in, it was basically I had kids and she had kids, and we got married back in 2013. And from my first marriage, for me to get custody, I had to take on the debt from the whole marriage, and she would give up custody to me. And so I went ahead and did that. So I had a good job, but I had loads of debt that I was not going to be able to pay. And so, and then I had this new family that my $60,000 income was not going to be able to really be enough to be as comfortable as I was when it was just me and 3 kids, because for 7 kids, because my wife and I, she had 3 and she had 3 from her first marriage and I had 3 from my first marriage, and we had 1 together. So we were, you know, all of a sudden this family of 9 all trying to live on $60,000 a year. And even here in the Midwest, that was difficult. So I started this side hustle of splitting and selling firewood, and I got to where I could make 15 grand a year on the side doing that. And then, you know, but it was really hard and difficult. And because I remember doing it when I was 18, 19 years old for extra money. And, you know, I could do it, and I could make $25, $30 an hour as long as I worked hard and stayed right at it. But in the end, it was just something that was, you had to work all the time to make it, and you had to work really hard to make it work, to make that money. So I sat down with my wife. I'd always told her at this time we were renting. I always told her I had this dream that I wanted to be a landlord, because these landlords were building portfolios and making pretty good money in my estimation, which was, you know, a little bit of a renter's gullible mindset to think that the landlord's making all the money, but because I didn't look at all of his bills. But, you know, there was something to the fact that there was a business model there. And I had read Rich Dad Poor Dad years before and never, you know, sat it down, never really did anything with it. And so I said, well, I'm going to learn this. So I read Rich Dad Poor Dad again, and then I got another Kiyosaki book, but I didn't really like how it described, you know, because it was the ABCs of apartment investing. And it was essentially like for buying large apartments and large apartment communities. And that wasn't going to work out for me because I didn't have the money for that. I was looking around and trying to talk to people. I had saved up 12 grand of my own money. And I was trying to talk to my mom and my brother about joining with me in a partnership, because I had found a little property, single family house. And I was like, we can do this and this. Because I'd studied my butt off on books and podcasts. And I'd done a lot of homework, because I would be listening to it while I was splitting and selling firewood. I would be listening to podcasts, books on Audible, real estate books constantly while I was working my side hustle after I got home from work and trying to learn to build a rental real estate portfolio. And that's what I decided I wanted to go to. I didn't really want to do fix and flips. It just felt like that would be just another job. And I didn't want another job. I wanted to build a portfolio, try to see if I could build wealth with it, with multifamily. I found this single family house and they had turned me down. My mom and my brother had turned me down on a partnership. My best friend came to me about a month and a half, 2 months later, because I was still excited. I didn't care. I was going to move forward. I was going to figure out how to do it. And so my best friend came to me and he said, hey, I just inherited some money. What would you give me for $20,000 if I put $20,000 in? And I said, I'd give you 25% of the company. And then my mom came back and she said, for $20,000, would you do the same thing for me? Would you? And so I was like, well, now that would give me $52,000 to start off with, which is actually enough to play with when you're getting into the small multifamily. And if you're making good decisions, you can grow it. And so that's where I started. So then we had this together, and I was looking for a multifamily deal, and I had ignored that single family house. Then I went to, I had a friend over, and we were having a couple drinks, and we were talking, and I was just telling him my dream, you know, just always talking about it. That's one of the things I always give people advice. I'm like, hey, don't be ashamed of it. Just always talk about it. Keep it in your mind, in the forefront of everything you do. What's in your mind, what's at the forefront of your mind, you're going to push forward and do, especially if you say it out loud all the time. They even talk to you about that in, you know, in weight loss programs, you know, say it out loud, tell everybody you know, because it kind of forces you to do it. And so he told me about a 6-unit property, and that was sitting vacant, mostly one bedrooms, and but it was dirt cheap. And he knew of it because his girlfriend's mom had once managed it, and she had told him about it. I said, yeah, give me your number. I'll call her. And I called her the next morning, and we bought that property. We closed May 15th, 2017, and that was a 6-unit building. We went from there, did the rehabs, mostly through construction loans and other things like that. We basically had done, no, that rehab we did out of pocket because we got 100% financing. And we spent about $30,000 on the rehab, but now we had a 6-unit building rented up, appraised for $190,000. Well, the bank wanted 2 years of financials to refinance. So later on, about a year and a half later, we ended up selling that property, just because the cash out of that 1031 into another property. But from there, we went after a triplex I found off market. That single family house that was really big, old single family house, we ended up converting it into a triplex because it had a two-car attached garage. We took the garage out, made that into a two-bedroom apartment. We made the downstairs, because the way the house worked out was perfect. The staircase was on a corner of the house, and the entrance was right there in front of the staircase. So by just simply shaping that off, and the upstairs had 5 bedrooms. So we converted it to an apartment. The downstairs already had 2 bedrooms, kitchen, bath, all of that stuff. We converted it to an apartment. And that one was expensive. I probably won't do another one like it, because I did not know how much expense I was going to get into. And I had to have my current maintenance guy, he kind of saved my butt on that one. And he became my permanent maintenance guy and our main contractor on everything. And so from then we just started rolling.
So you got 100% financing from the bank. Tell me how that came about.
Well, whenever I got the property under contract, the previous owner had it, and he had planned on doing the same thing that I did, that I ended up doing. He owned an oil business, and he was working 12-hour days, and it was taking up too much of his time. And this was something he had planned on getting into real estate, buying up some real estate, having some passive income. And he had decided he just didn't have time. So he actually took a loss on it. It appraised at the time for $90,000, totally vacant, needing rehabs and everything. We agreed to co-sign the notes, and the banker actually brought it up. He said, hey, you're going to be doing a lot of work to this. Would you be interested in 100% financing? And then you guys' money that you're bringing is for the contractor part. And I said, yeah, I'd be interested in that. That'd be great. So he gave me 100% financing on that deal. We were excited because we knew that, you know, apartments and stuff in our area go from 25 to 35,000, and we knew we could get in and out of this when we'd only have about $15,000 a unit in it by the time we were all said and done. Because they gave us 100% financing, they wouldn't refinance for 2 years, so we could cash out the rest of that money. So we ended up selling it about a year and 4 months later at a significant profit. One of the things that I learned while I was doing it, one of the obstacles that I was constantly trying to overcome, was not having enough money. So when you start out with, what are the things I do have? Every deal has multiple parts of the deal that it needs. You know, you obviously you need a good deal. You need to be able to handle rehabs. You need to be able to handle property management. You need to be able to do all of these things if you can do all of those other things, the money is out there. So I've done some OPM, you know, using other people's money, like my syndication, and that kind of came about in a different sort of way. And then I've done a lot with the original 52,000 that we had started with, because I think now I've paid in another 88,000 towards, I've put in another 8,000 of my own money. I eventually bought out one of my partners that owned 1/4 of the building, my buddy, because him and I started a property management company together. Because my mom wanted to be a silent partner, we started a property management company together, and then I swapped him my half of the property management for his quarter of my property because he was focused on that area. And I was like, look, the more I grow, the more you grow. And then I can focus on this area. You focus on that area. And we can be more like business associates because I don't know if you know this about partnerships. Sometimes they can be difficult. Yeah. And especially if you're in a growing partnership, it's a lot easier if you're just running a property. You know, if it's just one property or 24 units or 30 units, you know, you're generally going to agree on most all the things that need done. He kind of agreed with me that it worked better that way. Actually, about April of 2018, somebody had heard my story on Bigger Pockets and he had reached out to me and he had said, hey, would you be interested in another partnership? And I said, no, not right now. You know, just shrugging it off. I appreciate the offer, blah, blah, blah. And then I was sitting down with Rod Khalif on an interview about a week later. And Rod made a point. He said, look, you have something so many investors don't have. He said, you have everything set up. You've got the property management in place. And we have a very, very, very good property management that JC and I put together where we utilize all of our payments are online. We list things online. We use Facebook garage sale sites. He has the software that automatically puts it out on RentTech and Apartments.com. He uses YouTube video walkthroughs. So like a unit comes vacant. And as soon as the cleaning lady's done in there, we go through and do a YouTube video walkthrough. So then when we put it out online, we say, here's a link to the walkthrough. Here's a link to where you can apply online. Please don't contact us about a physical showing until you have an approved application, which greatly reduces people not showing up. And, you know, you keep going to these showings and nobody shows. Once they've actually done all the work to put an application in, get approved, 90% of the time they actually show up. And they've already seen the property, so, you know, a vast majority of the time, you know, through the YouTube video walkthrough, vast majority of the time, they just sign their digital lease right there on their phone because we can email them a lease. They can pay us right there online with their debit or credit card or checking account or whatever, and we basically can get everything set up. So we have the whole thing digitally set up. So anyways, Rod was telling me that, said, you have everything set up. You have a great maintenance contractor. You've got all of that set up to where you can get stuff done cheaper than almost anybody can. He said, you should not be trying to leverage up all your buildings. He said, you should start using other people's money. You should be willing to take these partnerships and things of that nature. And it was just like a light bulb hit me. And so after I got off that interview, I contacted the guy that had reached out to me and we partnered up. He brought most of the money and we bought an 8-unit deal that I'd been looking at, but didn't have the money to buy at the time. Well, then all of a sudden, you know, 3 months later, he's getting 14.9% returns. And he's like, hey, do you have anything else a little bit higher? Because, you know, a little bit more money. He's like, I think I've got a couple $100,000 I want to put to work. And I was like, huh. So that was a lot of money to me right then. I was like, I'd never had $200,000 just sitting in there to buy something with. I mean, I'd always been playing around with 50 and 60 here. How do I get this out? How do I get that out? Occasionally I'd get it up there at 70 or 80 where I could buy something a little bigger. But I never had just $200,000 sitting there for me to go and purchase something, find the right deal. So now I'm looking at on a whole new different level. And so then I'm looking at, and I see this, what looks to be to me like a really good deal. And so I contact the guy. That deal had already been sold, but he had this listing that he hadn't actually quite listed yet, that he had just gotten. He said, I think this might be more what you're looking for. It was a 1.82 purchase price. Actually, they were asking 1.9. It was a 9-cap in Springfield, Illinois, 62 units, and I needed to raise about $500,000. Well, I was only already $200,000 of the way there, and I thought, well, this is a new game. So I'm reading, got my Audible in. Now I'm reading syndication books, trying to figure out how this game is played. I went to one of Rod Khalif's seminars in Chicago, raised the other $300,000 through 6 different investors. So we knocked it down. This was in April. We knocked it down. And as we were doing that, I had already reached about 62 units in my own portfolio through various triplexes. I got a 10 unit, a couple 5 units, quite a few triplexes, one 4 unit. So I had quite a few, but I had 60 units. And it was enough for me to just quit my day job and move into full time. And then I was also working on that syndication, and it needed a lot of my efforts to get it to the finish line. We got it to the finish line in April because it had a significant value add. And so that was our selling point. So right now we're working on the value add on that. I just bought a 12 unit last month in a partnership with some investors from Oregon. Basically, it was an off-market deal. I had done a mailing to all the multifamily owners and this guy had contacted me and it was a 12 unit deal, $300,000. Rents were sitting around an average of $595, $585. the value add was the fact that he didn't have any financials, and he just threw the price out there at 300 grand, because if we just go by what average expected expenses are, and I looked through, because he had no financials, my due diligence on that one was a headache. I had to call utility companies, give them addresses and everything. And so we knocked it down where they brought the money and I brought the deal. We've already got all our July rents in. We've only got one vacancy. We're pumped. We're rolling forward.
I want to talk about your syndication process. So you said you'd already got the $200,000, which was basically from putting yourself out there.
Doing one other deal with him. Yep.
And then, then you got the $300,000. How hard was that to get?
Well, I got the $200,000. The other $300,000, essentially, I knew my mom had money, and I knew she was extremely happy with what I'd already done. And so that's why I was looking at a bigger project, because I knew I could get her into the 100,000 range, because she had thrown out the idea of putting in 100,000 towards something else, as long as she could continue to get those, 12 to 15% return range. And so I went to her and I said, no, I need more like 200,000, maybe even three. And she came back and we hem-hauled around a little bit, and she went with 191 she put into this deal. And then she put in 191, it put in 200. And then I'd had some other people that had reached out to me about possible partnerships. Had various people come from 25,000 into 50,000 to finish out the last of it. So we ended up raising about 515, I think, altogether.
How long did that process take? Was there a lot of people you called?
To raise the money took about, I think it took about 2 to 3 weeks. I was pretty aggressive, and I had all my work put together. So when I came to them, I was like, these are expected returns. This is how it's operating now. Here's my value add. We're going to meter all the water, which is about $38,000 a year in water bills that we're going to bill back to the tenants, but it's only about $58 a tenant per month, which is essentially like a rent increase. As we flip over the units, as we turn over the units, because the units are running about $60 lower, we're going to lower the expenses because it was running high on maintenance expenses. And this is what we expect on the other side, is we're going to improve the NOI by nearly $90,000. If you take that at a 9 cap, that's about $1 million improvement in the property. That's only a $1.8 million property now, but we believe by 2021, we will have it at a $2.8, $2.7 million property. And then at that point, you've almost tripled your investment. We can 1031 exchange if everybody wants to stay in, or we can try to refinance you guys out. We have multiple exit strategies, and we can just discuss with you, since it's not like we have 40 investors. When you're trying to keep, six or seven people on the same page, it's a lot easier than trying to keep 40 investors on the same page.
So how did you structure it then? So did you just do
structured it as a 1031. I believe, what is that? 50, I think it's a 501B.
506B.
506B. Yeah. So it would be like friends and family. So it was people that I already had relationships with, people that had already contacted me first. And I had done, I do quite a bit of mentoring. I get quite a bit of calls or emails and text messages where people just ask me questions and try to have me, especially beginners. And then some of them are like the people that I just partnered on the 12 unit that we bought together, where we partnered on it. I brought the deal and they brought the money. When we partnered on that, they actually have been investing for 10 years, but they didn't have the level of success that I had. They just, but they still had a decent portfolio that had significant equity, because they've been in it for 10 years, obviously. They had significant equity in some of their properties, and they were actually interested in moving their investment dollars out of Oregon and their equity out of Oregon and into the Midwest as well, because you get better cash flow, and it's a little safer, since Oregon's already just came down with a statewide rent control law. A lot of their properties in Portland, they just came out with more rent control laws on top of what the state came out. And so they were willing to move their money out of there. So that's kind of how I end up meeting a lot of investors. Some of them don't ever become investors. They just become friends. And some of them, we don't become partners or whatever. But I feel that it's just the more and more and more I do and try to help people get started. I was talking to a woman the other day. She had heard me on another podcast, and she had just texted me, because I always give my phone number out. She texted me and she's like, hey, when is a good time? And I was like, usually I try to schedule between 2 and 3, things like this, or phone calls with people that are just seeking help, mentoring, because I don't charge for my time, but I just pack it into one time period per day. Mm-hmm. And so I had, like her, in her situation, she had $300,000 she couldn't get access to or put a lien on right at that moment. She had about two more months to wait to get to it, but she'd found this great deal. She found two great deals. And I had said, well, what if, I said, if you're certain you can get a hold of this money and you want to put it towards these two great deals, why don't you just make your offer with 90 days? Why don't you just make your offer, figure out how to come up with $20,000 on each one so you can put $20,000 down on each one as earnest money and start your due diligence. Give yourself plenty of outs during your due diligence period. You'll find out more certain if you, and then you can use anything in your due diligence period to back out and get all your earnest money, but you'll find out if it's the property you want. And you'll also find out if it's definitely going to be the 2 months that you think it is for you to get access to your funds. You close in 90 days. You already have access to your funds at that time. You can still do both deals. And it was like, boom, you know, a light bulb went off in her head. And I said, or your other option is take one of these, you know, they're both off market deals. They're both in real, they're both really good deals. I looked at them with her. I was like, yeah, they look like great deals. I said, take one of them, wholesale it, and use the profit to buy the other one. You know, put the earnest money down on both of them, wholesale one, buy the other one. So she, I was like, I was trying to throw out options that not everybody thinks of, because I've had to live this entire life where I'm trying to figure out the money part, because every other part I've got figured out. The money part was the difficult part. So, you know, I've always kind of come up with creative ways. I, you know, whenever I was growing that unit, that portfolio that I have personally of 62 units that are just mine, not in any kind of partnership, I've done personal loans from family members at 10% that I had to pay back later when I could refinance out of properties. So I'd like, you know, maybe I found a property over here, a 5-unit property, totally vacant, brick structure, good roof, sound, looked like you were walking right into the 1960s when you walked in there with a different wall paper, the orange carpet, all of it. But I knew if I put that 5-unit building, I knew if I just, because it was just a facelift, I knew if I, you know, repainted the cabinets, put all new countertops in to make it look pretty, with my modern look, with my vinyl snap together gray flooring, my gray walls, white trim, higher end range, and refrigerator. You know, just some things that where you walk in, the tenant walks in and they're like, oh, wow, they're, you know, their eyes pop a little bit. They're like, this is really nice. I remember how these used to look, because, you know, you'll get that guy that ever says that, you guys did a good job. But I knew that that guy that was selling it dirt cheap. And I knew that there was a ton of value add there, but I didn't have the money to give him down at the time. And so I went to a family member and said, look, I need to borrow $10,000. I'll give you 10% interest. You've seen what I do over here. This is why I'm borrowing it. And they said, okay, I'll do that. You know, and then I paid back a significant portion of those on refinances using the BRRRR method. And some of them, I think I still have a $10,000. I think I have a $20,000 note with a family member and they don't want me to pay it off. So I'm like, well, every time I get the money back out of a deal, I'm like, do you want me to pay you off or just keep it rolling? And they're like, as long as you're paying me 10%, you're paying me better than anybody else is. So that, you know, I just went from there and that's how the business grew. Rod Khalif does a good, I think it was Rod or Michael Blanc. They did a good little article I read one time on the selling points on selling a seller on seller financing. And there's some very good tax benefits for them. Now, generally, most of these sellers, you know, and you don't think about this, but most of them are in their 60s and 70s. So the tax benefits aren't as important to them, because if the seller financing is going to extend out 20, 30 years, they're never going to see the money. Mm-hmm. So generally, most of them are like you and me. We'd like to see the money in our hands because we can put it to use. So in those cases, I go to them and I'll say, I'll give you this, these are the terms, 20-year terms, 5% interest, and I'll give you a 3-year balloon. So within 3 years, I have to come to the bank and get it refinanced out. So then I just make sure that whatever my value add is and my principal pay down is, even if I've only put 5% down, but whatever it is, I have to be to where I'm at 20% equity or 25% equity within that 3 years. As long as my value add can take care of that, then I don't have to worry about bringing any more money back to the table to have the bank take it from me and put it on a bank note. So, you know, I had to get creative. I had to take a few risks with things like that, but I was just like, I was sick of the corporate world. And I always felt like I was meant for more. Like, I was like, I can learn things. I can do things just like anybody else can. I have a business degree. Might as well put it to use for myself than somebody else. I have a real estate degree through podcasts like yours and many others. And I have a real estate degree from all these guys that have already done it ahead of me. If it's been done before, I know I can do it.
So what, on your syndication, what were some of the biggest lessons you learned in that process?
Well, some of the lessons I learned on the financing side was the big one, was that it was a lot more difficult to get that financing, even if you had all that money up front, than it was for me to like go to the bank to get a financing on a 5-unit building. It was a lot more difficult once you got above that $1 million threshold. They took everything but a blood sample.
So, did you get agency debt?
What's that? No, they were. I was not able to get agency debt on the portfolio because the portfolio, one of the properties was three properties in this portfolio, and one of them was too far away from the other two to get agency debt on the whole entire portfolio. Now, one of the properties, which is 36 units of the 62, after our value add is complete, we may consider selling the other two properties off with their value adds on them and selling them off and then refinancing the 36 units with agency debt. We've kind of rolled around of what we're going to do because the 36 unit is eligible for agency debt. The other two properties are not. It's a 10 and a 16 unit on the other two properties, and they're too far apart. So we can get agency debt on the 36 unit. And so that's one of the things we're considering with that one, and then selling off the other two after we have good after we have them stabilized with good financials and everything else.
Awesome. So what else are you saying? You had some other points of the interesting lessons you learned.
So with the financing, the interesting lessons I learned was as how to approach them. And I can't explain it right now. I could probably teach a class on it at this point, but I had a great mortgage broker, Eric Stewart, basically knew how to approach them. And he crafted a narrative of what we were doing, where we were coming from, because we didn't have what they really like to see is 5 years, 10 years history in multifamily. But we only had about two, you know, at the time we had, or even less than two. So we didn't have this 5 or 10 year history. But the one thing we did have was the sawmill history, which is my family business that my mom owns, and that my dad passed away in 2015. We had all grown up. That was my W-2 job, was working for that family business. We'd all grown up in that business, and that business had 25 years of history. So he helped craft a narrative that, look, the money we're using to buy this is from the excess profits of this business that we've run for 25 years. We've built these 62 units out. We built these 62 units that we already have out with the profits from that, which is a narrative, not the truth. So, but they want to hear a narrative. They don't really care. I mean, they want to hear a narrative. They're never going to listen to this story and be real comfortable lending me $1 million. But they needed a narrative. Well, we had the narrative of having that 25-year history in business. And so that was what he was like, let's build the narrative around your strong suits. You know, what have you guys done? Where, you know, and then explain, you know, look what you guys did in these 62 units. We ran and we showed them our significant, you know, equity in them. We showed them our cash flow, what our debt, you know, debt coverage ratio was on these and what we were looking at on this 62 unit. And then they finally were like, yeah, okay, I think we'll go ahead and do this. And so that was something that I didn't know you had to do, or you had to craft to get some debt like that.
Good lesson. Was there any other lessons learned on this one? Surprises or anything like that?
There's been surprises along the way. We basically closed on the last day that we had from our extension. My mom was trying to do a close while she's in Miami on vacation, because it's in April, and she's running around Miami in an Uber because I emailed her all the documents, and she was staying in an Airbnb place, so it wasn't like a big hotel, and she didn't have fax machine, she didn't have any of that availability. And so she's Ubering around Miami trying to get to somewhere where she can print off these documents, sign her portion in overnight delivery back to us. They didn't get her the documents until 1 o'clock Eastern time. She's got to have them signed, filled out, printed by 4 o'clock Eastern time so that they can go out that night and be overnighted to closing, and which was the next day. I'm on the phone with her. I'm on the phone with Regions Bank because she had an account with them where she had a significant chunk of money sitting there. And then they were mean to her, and they basically just told her to leave, and she's crying because she's not really used to doing any of this. I'm trying to calm her down. I finally call and talk to the bank manager there. He brings his guy in. He says, no, we're going to take care of her. And then they finally took care of her and got the whole thing done. And she dropped it in the mailbox 2 minutes before the cutoff was. And then, as it turned out, she was supposed to mail the documents to closing, to the closing title company, and then title would mail them to the lender. And she just mailed them to the lender because she was swore that's where her email said to send them. So she just mailed the documents to the lender. So then the next day, the documents aren't sitting at title by 11 o'clock like they're supposed to. They're sitting at the lender. I'm like pulling my hair out because I'm like, oh my goodness. So then the lender says, you know what? We're just going to go with it. Whatever. And the lender goes ahead and lets us close the deal that day because the seller was so fed up. He was just like, this is the last day. We were supposed to close, you know, a month ago. This is the last day I'm dealing with this. The lender finally was like, okay, we have the documents in hand. Title says they don't need them. Let's go ahead and get this done. It was a hair pulling experience right to the bitter end.
That definitely sounds stressful.
It was.
So that's quite an amazing story, how you put all that stuff together. You kind of maneuvered through borrowing money and partnering to get stuff done, the syndication. So what is next for Michael Beeman?
I'm still working with that syndication. We're still going through and getting our rents up, still getting our water metered. We're still going through that. I just bought a 12 unit in Terre Haute, Indiana with some partners where I brought the deal and they brought the cash. I'm doing another deal similar to that with another partner on 5 units that I located. So I'm still being willing to buy some smaller pieces with OPM, other people's money. And then I'm trying to, at the same time, I actually have a meeting 15 minutes from now with my banker to capture some of the equity out of some of my properties so I don't have to sell them. I have a meeting with him to try and recapture, refinance 5 units of those 5 units. It's like 6 units, a triplex, a duplex, and a single family house. One of them I own outright. Another one's on seller financing where I had to put a huge chunk of money down that I borrowed from a family member. I'm going to refinance out that. And then the other one I have owned for 2 years and I got a steal of a deal on it and I paid down on it 2 years. And I think I have probably about $25,000 in equity in that. So I'll be between all of this, I'll end up pulling about $70,000 in equity. And then I'm going to look for another deal or possibly look for another smaller deal, you know, in the 8 to 12 unit range out of that equity while still having, you know, those units cash flowing. And I'm just going to keep going forward. My goal by 2020 was to have 200 units. And like I told somebody the other day, and I was like, some might say that's a lofty goal to be at 200 units now that I'm at 136 units after 2.5 years to getting to 200. This is another hump to get over. Might think that's a lofty goal, but if I shoot for the stars and I miss, what am I going to complain if I'm at 160 or 165 cash flowing units? So I'm not going to complain. I'm just going to keep moving forward and keep growing. My goal is 4 or 5 years from now to kind of take a step back, make sure I have 300 or 400 or 500 units under that property management company, have everything smoothed out and stabilized, and let them just mail me mailbox money, I guess you'd say. And then I actually get to spend a little bit more time with my kids, my family. We're doing more vacations now. I think I'm going on vacation next Tuesday for a week, and that'll be my third vacation this year, for my third week-long vacation this year. So I do get to do more vacations now. I do get to do more things. My income was, significantly higher in 2018 than it ever has been, but significantly higher than it was in 2017. And I expect it to continue to grow in 2019. So it's on that pace as well.
That's great. So how can people reach out to you if they need to get in touch with you?
My email is michaelbeeman@beemanandsons.com. My phone number is 217-508-8185. And you can also, like I say, I try to do a lot of mentoring. I try and work with people, try to help people. The people from Oregon, I think I found them a nice off-market mobile home park that wasn't something I could take down. It was about a $600,000 purchase. I helped them find that. So I'm still trying to always do things, always trying to work with people. Don't feel bad about sending me a text message. Again, 217-508-8185. I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, and we look forward to hearing from your success in the future.
All right. Thanks, Reed.
All right, thanks.